This is the 1895 Podcast, official podcast of Shelburne FC, bringing you news, views and interviews from inside Tolka Park, Dublin's finest since 1895. Here's your host, Stephen Duty.
Hello, welcome to the 1895 Podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne Football Club. What a night in Tolka Park. Captain Coyle curled one into the back of the net. Conor Cairns fed Will Jarvis, who gobbled up his chance. And the Reds withstood some heavy pressure to claim three big points in the Ringsend Derby. We'll review a great night in Tolka. We'll hear from the men's kit man, Graham Watson. Liam Ward gives us an update from the women's camp. And we'll hear from Academy Director, Collie Barron, as the League of Ireland Academy season got underway last weekend. Joining me today, as always, is the great and wonderful Ben Cleary. Ben, how are you?
Great, Duty. I'm not even going to say thanks for having me back because I think it's a bit redundant at this point.
Hang on a minute now. You're not saying thanks for having me back because you are told not to say it.
Not by
anyone behind the scenes. Somebody who's very much front and centre. We might have actually mentioned her in the podcast last week about hoping to get a certain photo of her up outside the stadium. So yeah, basically, Ben, you do what you're told.
Yeah, look, a bit of advice comes from the skipper. You have to listen to it, don't you? So I'm going to listen to it. Duty, did you practice that intro? That was very good. A lot of alliteration in there. All your C's.
It just comes to me. It just comes to me.
Very poetic.
It comes to me after about 15 minutes of sitting in my van while I should be working with my tongue sticking out the side of my mouth trying to think up words that start with the same letter. So yeah, that's always a massive part of my Tuesday. Ben, what a week. What a Friday. What a result. What a performance.
Yeah, it's a bit mental, isn't it? Our whole season was over after the first game, so it's crazy to see the turnaround, I suppose.
Hang on. All right, okay. I found it mad last week, right? The amount of I'm not going to call it panic as such, but the amount of people that were just hammering everybody. Like, just
everyone just got caned. It was like, you're wrong, you're wrong, we're all gone. Like, won't someone please think of the children?
Yeah, it was some classic shells over reaction came last week. But back to the point, Ben, back to the point. How great were the Reds on Friday?
Unbelievable. That's probably the best I've seen us play in years. I think it's first half especially was probably one of the best, most complete performances I've seen from a Red side. And look, it's the first time that I remember us beating Rovers, because I'm only 25, so I was a bit young last time. So yeah, it was just a big thing for me. Like, it was very emotional at full time, you know, hugging yourself, Darren, Reggie, Smith. Like, it was just cathartic, even. Like, it was brilliant. Like, the performance from everyone, it was a complete team performance. Mark Coyle, I think, exemplified what it means to be a captain. I think he got a bit of stick after the first game of the season, and look, you can either crumble under that or you can come out and do what he did. And he led by example. Like, he just went out there and gave it absolutely everything. And his finish, look, some people might have thought he had it in the locker, but I could have been one of them, but it was unbelievable.
It was some finish. We were behind the goal at the Drumcondra end, and what I will say is that goalkeeper, now he was amazing. He was really, really good for the rest of the game for Rovers, pulled off some great saves. He left, you could have parked the Nissan Micra in the half of the goal that he left. But in all fairness to Mark Coyle, gets his head up, just guided it, didn't even had a shot in the second half that he just lashed, and Paul's saved that one. But this one, it's a classic FIFA finesse shot, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, just curl it in. Like, it was almost slow motion.
Yeah, it was one of those, it was travelling, and you're kind of going, oh, that looks good, that looks good. And you're kind of waiting for the keeper to kind of come out of the crowd of bodies. From what we could see, no sign of it. And then, mayhem in the Riverside. But I was delighted for Coyler because he gave me a look after the Watford game. That was just enough. He didn't actually have to say anything. That's how disappointed he was with his performance. I can say it now. The manager threw a bit of stick his way as well. Down at the press conference during last week. So I'm just happy for him. He came into the ground and he was actually signing footballs for us. And I said to him, are you looking forward to it? And he said, yeah, I'm buzzing. I can't wait. And like, as an occasion for your first home game, leading the troops out in the Ringsend Derby in a packed out Riverside. Magic stuff. I seen somebody online on Twitter, don't remember who it was, should have taken down their name. It may actually have been Dwayne Doyle, who was a good, solid Reds man, said that just in the first half an hour, we were just electric. The energy levels, the amount of pressing, tackles, like everything was aggressive. The way we were passing the ball was aggressive. We were running at people. Didn't give Rovers a second to settle on the ball. It's probably, if you were to map out a perfect kind of first half an hour, obviously the block in the copy book is the missed penalty. Didn't matter in the end. I thought Tariq quit himself really, really well after missing the penalty. Could very easily just go completely to pot after missing the penalty. And he actually just after it, don't remember whether he skewed a clearance or something, and I kind of went, oh no, this could be one of them nights for him. But I thought he reacted brilliantly. He was so good defensively. Gives us so much in different positions. He's a real kind of utility man there, where he can push on if we need him. He can drop off when we need to sit back and soak up a bit of pressure. But Ben, if you were to draw up a perfect half an hour, obviously minus the penalty, that was probably it, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I just think, like, I've watched the match back because, look, it won't be the first time.
Because research.
Yeah, not the first time, won't be the last. I'll be definitely one to watch back. But, like, there was one passage of play where I think it was John O'Sullivan got the shot off, and it just came from three or four passes on that right-hand side where just link-up play, little ball through, and he was gone. And he's another one that I think, with the performances of the likes of Mark Coyle and your Conor Kearns, and like those big performances on the day, he was one that I think may kind of go under the radar. But again, another brilliant performance. I think he acquitted himself really, really well. I think he slotted in really well to the team. And I think he's kind of proven a lot of those doubters wrong.
I'd agree with that totally. It's going to be a lot of agreeing on this pod, Ben, because we were just magic. There's not really many holes you can pick. Obviously, I should have mentioned at the start, it's only the two of us tonight. Adam is actually working. We try our best to kind of shuffle it around to suit everyone, but the three-man booth means, Ben, there's a little bit less pressure on everybody. So no Adam tonight. That's the only reason he's not here. Just work commitments, and the Reds don't pay the bills, so I'm sure Adam will listen on intently, as he usually does. You mentioned John O'Sullivan, Ben, and that move. I think, was that the one he stepped over the ball? A ball was kind of played to him, and yeah, he stepped over it, and then he spun around the back and got slipped through and tried to stick it in at the front post. Paul's pulled off one of many good saves. Well, I'm all in on John O'Sullivan. I think he can do an awful lot of different things. Sorry, I cut across you there.
No, it's grand. He just adds a lot. Like that move where he steps over, I kind of, when I watched it back, I was like, that's something you'd see in the trailer for a FIFA game. Like it was just, everything kind of came together there, where it's like, I just imagined it being in a trailer. I was like, that is magic. Look, he forced an unbelievable save out of Pauls, who then, look, went on to grow into the game as well and make another few unbelievable saves. He's definitely one that has proved the doubters wrong. Like when he was announced, there was a lot of people unsure of him. And I'd say, look, he was a bit unsure himself. He hadn't played a lot of football in his 18 months across the road. So I think he just backed himself. He backed the management, and it's proven he offers an awful lot up front. I think the three attackers on the day, they're just different. They can give you an awful lot of variety in attack, and I think that just kind of showed on both sides.
Something I noticed on Friday as well, I've kind of noticed it a few times before. I don't know whether I've ever mentioned it on the pod, but Matty Smith's a massive shithouse.
Oh.
In the nicest way possible. I never really copped it, but the amount of boot he's leaving in on people, and he's constantly like yapping at people, and
it's unbelievable.
I'm a big fan of it. There was one in particular in front of the Riverside, it was, and he left a little boot in. And it's like, if you were to look at Matty, you wouldn't think you're going to get it. Don't know whether it's the inner Scott in him that comes out. But Matty was another one. Look, over the course of the two games, he probably hasn't been mentioned as a great performer in either game. Probably undeserved, because I think the work rate from him, now from everybody, the work rate was incredible on Friday. And I genuinely think that first half an hour was just a case of we outworked Rovers. Think we wanted it that little bit more, and that's a real old cliche thing to say, but
it did look like
we were just everywhere.
Yeah, like they couldn't settle on the ball, they couldn't get their pass together, they couldn't settle into the game, and I think that comes from the pressing, that comes from first and foremost your striker. I think Matty probably doesn't get the credit he deserves, and he definitely should get credit, because look, if he's not pressing, that kind of ruins a lot of other presses. So it's unbelievable. Like, he just makes things uncomfortable for other players. And there was one in particular as well I saw where a decision didn't go his way and he was straight back up and he was charging people down. I was like, that is what you want. That is what you need. I was loving it. Absolutely. It's a brilliant all-around performance. I think you can't name everyone, but I would name everyone, because it's just, it doesn't happen if they're not as that unit. And I think that's what kind of put them ahead of Rovers in the first half, especially.
100%. We could have easily, and I think most teams this year will, when they play Rovers, they'll just drop off. Like, with that array of talent they have, especially going forward, like, you could forgive teams for just dropping off and saying, right, let's just limit the space they have. Let's see what we can do. Might catch them on the break. Might catch them, like, Dobie from a set piece, something like that. But I think that's a... I'd hope that's like an intent kind of thing. It's like, no, we're not going to be that type of team. And look, everyone is all the negative Damien Duff team, or the defensive Shells team. That was not one bit of defensive performance on Friday. Like, the level of aggression and some of the passages of play were magic. Seeing one particular disgruntled Rovers fan, a grown man photoshopped a bus in front of Talca Park. Can you believe that? Can you believe that? Now, I don't get into it with people. I really try not to. But imagine watching that game and thinking that the Reds parked the bus. Yeah, obviously in the second half, you drop off. You just soak up a bit of pressure. We still gave up a couple of chances. Having dropped off, that's going to happen. That's just part and parcel of, like, a game of football is. Look, yeah, if we drop off, they're going to get a bit of space. They're going to get a couple of chances. You cannot, like... No team goes through a game of football, doesn't get a couple of chances. But the big man, the deceivingly tall man, who anytime I stand beside, I always go, Jesus, he's a bleeding giant. And for some reason, he doesn't look overly tall on the pitch from the stand, I don't think, was Conor Cairns. And he came up so many times. And an awful lot of it wasn't like... He did make two great saves off the top of my head. One when he scrambled across his line, and the other one was kind of a shot high right at the end that he tipped over the bar.
Tipped it over the bar, yeah.
Yeah, but the amount of just clean catches he had.
Yeah.
And the amount of times just like a bobbly shot be coming into him when you kind of get the jitters and go, oh, that's a dodgy one. And he just looks so composed. And it was like a flip from the Waterford game. So I know I said it here last week, maybe a little bit critical of Connor with the amount of credit he has built up in the bank with us. Again, like, those little nitty gritty bits of goalkeeping, I think, can sometimes go under the radar. And then I was raging because I remember saying to you after the game, we'd agreed we were going to do Connor Cairns for the post-match interview, and I hadn't seen a video of the goal back, and we weren't sure whether somebody had flicked it on or not. But I'm raging, I didn't mention that he got an assist. And there's not a whole lot of goalkeepers I wouldn't say are going to get assists. I seen a stat, I can't remember where I seen it, but something like there's only been four goalkeepers in the last number of years have actually had an assist. and two of them have came this season. Sam Sargent, the Waterford keeper last week, and then Conor Cairns this week. But his distribution was the first part of that goal. It was something else. And then, I mean, Will Jarvis, what can you say about that?
Oh, look, unbelievable. The composure, the touch, everything just screams elegance, just screams ability. But like I think the pass from Conor, like you'd expect that from your centre mid, from your goalkeeper, maybe not, but it just shows the quality he has. And I think, as you said, he was unbelievable in the game. That reaction save over the bar. He made another one from a corner with his foot. I think it was his right foot. He just kind of stabbed it away. Like, they're game-winning saves. Like, without Conor, that game could be in danger. So, like, he really rose to the occasion, and it was a massive occasion. A sold-out Talca Park. Like, massive capacity. And especially those, like, that save came when his feet came in the Rovers' end. That's not an easy end to play, I'd imagine. So, unbelievable from him. But Will Jarvis, we spoke about it last week, you know, who comes in with Liam Burt out. I said, sure, has to be Jarvis, because that's what he can do. That's the X factor he brings. I think the manager mentioned it in his post-match about how he has that kind of ability where he is a little bit lenient with him because he can come out and he can win you matches like that. And it just shows, like, everything about that was perfect. Complete composure. That's, I think, what you have to say about both finishes on the day for us.
Yeah, 100%. Something else I wanted to actually touch on for Coyler's goal was, it was only when I watched the goal back a few times, because I'm a complete nerd and I've nothing better to do with my time. Paddy Barrett had a huge role in that goal. Not only for his, like, he got it down and great footwork to kind of open it up, but I think it was Gavin Molloy was standing literally 3 yards away from Paddy, and that would have been, like, 9 times out of 10, I think a centre half in the box shaped up that way, he's either shanking it towards goal or he's just giving it to the closest player he sees. And he didn't. He bypassed Gav Molloy, slipped it to Coyler, and it just gave Mark that kind of yard just to get it out of his feet, bit of composure, be able to stick it in the top corner. So don't underestimate Paddy's influence for that first goal. The turning point in the game, and it sounds mad, like, we were winning 2-0 at this stage, but I thought the game kind of flipped on its head a little bit when Graham Burke came on. I think Sean Hoare going off kind of kick-started Rovers. It got them going. And, like, in Graham Burke, I was talking to somebody after the game who just said he is just a cut above, okay, like, what's in the league. And I know people will talk about Jack Byrne, and like, rightfully so, and like, Chris Forrester. Forrest is a different type of player, but Graham Burke is just fairly sick talent, really, isn't he?
He was a game changer, and to having that kind of ability coming off the bench, like, it's just, you kind of raise your eyes to the heavens and say, what are you supposed to do? But, like, I think he definitely was a catalyst for what they did. Especially, like, when he gets that ball and he just drives at you, you just can't drop off. You can't give him that bit of space, because he is capable of just moments of magic. And I think he settled them down in attack, I think, would be the best way to put it. I think he just brought that little bit of energy and calmness to their attack, and I think that's when they really could push on in the game. But I think the lads did really well to deal with it. I think they kept him as quiet as anyone could be expected to keep him, especially for a player his quality.
Somebody at halftime, Ben, turned, I don't remember who it was, but they said, this is 2-2 written all over it. This is a definite 2-2, if not a 3-2 loss. The typical Shells thing. And sure enough, a couple of minutes after halftime, we get cut open by one pass and bang, hits the back of the net. A kind of similar goal to the Waterford one. Like, the Waterford one was kind of quick. Keeper got it in his hands, slipped it down the side. JJ just got burned for pace, which, look, that was always going to happen in that scenario. A ball across the box and it ends up in the net. Similar one here. I don't remember who it was. Might have been Gary O'Neill, maybe. With the defence splitter kind of stuck it between wing back and centre back. Burke gets it, whips the cross in, and Gaffney, I think it was there to finish it. Is that a concern, that kind of quick turnover of a goal, or am I being a bit dramatic? We're only two games in, conceded twice. Is it an overreaction maybe to say we look a little bit vulnerable to balls into those areas?
I don't know if it's an overreaction. I think it's appropriate to look at it and reflect on it, because look, it happens once, it's an isolated thing, but it has happened twice. I'm sure the manager, Joey, staff, they're going to look at it. They look at everything. Like, I think it's going to be something that they could very easily stamp out of games. But I think it's just that thing as well, where maybe you're not settled straight away and they do kind of catch you off guard a bit. And look, is there a way to get rid of that? It's just basically getting into games earlier, just kind of switching back on straight away. And I think that's something that'll come with more games under the belt. I think it's just, look, you're very early into the season, it could be very easy to get carried away with stuff like that. But I think it'll be a thing that it will be stamped out with more games under the belt.
I'd agree. Something again was noticeable, and I have a feeling we're going to end up saying this an awful lot this season, but the bench, John O'Sullivan went off. I'm hoping that's nothing too major. Hopefully just a bit of fatigue, and he did cover an awful lot of ground again, so hopefully that's nothing major for John O'Sullivan. But like, being able to turn to the bench, like our subs that came on were Evan Caffrey, Shane Farrell, John Martin, and then Jad came on right at the end. And they all played a part. Like, Shane Farrell and John Martin ran themselves into the ground, as did Evan Caffrey. Jad probably didn't have as much time to have an impact on the game, but I've flagged that and subs and that type of thing, because we did get a question in, and I definitely think it's kind of a fair one. It's not I do feel it could become a factor as the year goes on. So this was the message that came in from Eric. Hey lads, me and my mates were having a post-mortem after the game on Friday and are pretty concerned about the lack of depth in midfield. The two lads work really well in there, but with an injury/suspension, I'd be really concerned. Who do you think would be realistic options in midfield if we were to lose JJ or Coyler for any major period of time? And is it now shown as bad business letting Brian McManus go? So we'll start with the first part. Who do you see as a realistic option then if either of the two boys was to pick up a kind of an injury or a major suspension?
I think, look, Evan Caffrey is one of those that he will literally do whatever you tell him to do. With those points last season where he played as a 9, a 10, you know, he came on the wing. He's a very versatile player. I think he has the ability to fill in. Is it a long-term solution? Maybe not, but I think he definitely could put in a shift there. Another one, a bit of a dark horse, Tyreek Wilson could probably slot in quite handily to those positions. I think he did in Drogheda last season. I think he played in the middle, or it looked like he played through the middle, out in Drogheda, if I'm not mistaken. I'm open to correction, of course, Duty. If you want to correct me, you can, but I'm pretty sure it was. But I think they're kind of what you look at. Look, with Coyler and JJ, they work very well together, but they're a very particular kind of player. And just looking at what we have, I don't think we have that kind of style of player. Like, you look at Jad, who comes on for JJ, very similar players, but they wouldn't be the exact same player. I think defensively, maybe Jad wouldn't be as competent or confident as a JJ. So I think they're kind of what we have at the club. Doody, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I just felt for the last kind of 15 minutes, the two boys in the middle looked out on their feet. And I was kind of looking, all right, we need either an extra body or just a little freshen of the legs. And when you flick down through the subs, like, Evan Caffrey's probably the obvious one, but he's not really, I don't think he's really a centre midfielder of that kind of mould. So it's only now, after getting the question from Eric, I am kind of looking at it going, jeez, if we're struggling, like the amount of ground that JJ and Kyler covered on Friday was mental. I'd love to see their stats on it because they were everywhere. But with 10, 15 minutes to go in really intense games like that, a stopgap probably isn't going to be enough, if that makes sense. Like, the all we've said there is, yeah, Evan Caffrey could fill in there. Tyreek could fill in if you are stuck. You could probably, if you are really stuck, Gavin Malloy could obviously step in there, but he's been such a rock at the back. I'd rather not have to go near him at all and leave him to go about his business. Like, Keith Ward's not that type of player. He's not going to, you know, win ball, and you know, he's more used in the final third to unlock a team. Like, I could see Wardy now playing a big part in Friday and Monday's games, more so than a game like that against Rovers. Oh yeah, I'd be a little bit concerned probably now on paper, and having seen a couple of games. The last part of the question was letting Brian McManus go a bad bit of business? Now, I have an opinion on this, a pretty solid one. I don't think it was bad business. Brian was a lovely fella and good servant to Shells, and always gave his best. But being realistic, Brian was injured more than he was fit. So he was probably never going to be any more than a stopgap like what Tyreek or Gavin Malloy or Jad or somebody like that could be. Actually, John O'Sullivan could probably do a job in there as well if you're stuck. But I think that was all Brian was ever going to be, was kind of a... You couldn't rely on him. I know it's really harsh to say, but I wasn't overly concerned when we let Brian go. It's a pity he went where he went. Let's be honest, he'd rather him go somewhere else. But I hope it works out for Brian in that he gets loads of football. I hope he gets relegated just because of the jerseys wearing. But I'd love it to work out for Brian. And look, I'd love to see him get fit and come back in a year or two. That'd be the ideal scenario, probably. But I don't think it was bad business to let go of Brian. But I don't know if you agree with that.
Look, I'd be inclined to agree. I think we said that at the start. I agree a lot. I don't think it was bad business because, Brian probably is at the point in his career, coming back off an injury, where he would like to be starting every week. I think that's fair to say. And I don't think the situation he was in with us was the correct one for him, because I just don't think he would be starting every week. And that's not a knock on him or his ability or anything like that. I think that's just a reflection of the players that are ahead of him in the pecking order. Like the two lads that start, there's not a lot in the country that would start over them, in my opinion, JJ and Coyler. So I think it was just more so a personal thing where he just needs to get the minutes under the belt, and that just, I don't think was going to happen here. So I don't think it's bad business. I think it was more of a necessity.
Yeah, the negative element of letting Brian go, I think, was more so, like, when I seen him go, I thought, right, okay, that's obviously money in the budget now. Like, you know, you have a few bob there, you have a wage. I was hoping somebody would come in. That it was obviously just too late in the day or whatever for that to happen, but, like, as well, you're going to have the summer window where I'm sure there'll be comings and goings then as well. But I definitely an extra body or two in there, just because of the way we play, the level of intensity we play at, I'd love to have an extra body in there. Speaking of intensity, Ben, there was a mad kind of period of time, kind of on the stroke of 90 minutes, where, well, take the first bit, was Tyreek's tackle. Now, right, I pulled the trigger on the last opinion. I want you to go first on this one. Tyreek's tackle, red or no red?
No.
Why?
I just don't think it was red. I don't know why. It's just no. It's a weird one.
I think it was a definite red. At the time, I didn't. I was like, you know, good old fashioned tackle. No, nothing wrong with it, but he goes in with 2 feet. Like, he's off the ground. I screenshotted it, and like, he's properly off the ground with 2 feet in the air, and he catches, I don't remember who it was, but he catches the Rovers player. And like, people say, oh yeah, if you follow through, but I definitely thought it was a red.
I think anyway, I'm just incredibly biased here. I think it's definitely a bias coming through where it's like, nah, professional tackle, good solid tackle.
Don't get me wrong, I bleed celebrated it like it was a goal at the time, but when I watched it back, and it's funny, I kept seeing the tackle because of the incident that happened after it, but yeah, the more I looked at the tackle, I was going, oh jeez, that's a bad one. Now, thank God, retrospective red cards are just not a thing here, so don't have to worry about that. But what happened after it? Is it Marcus Poom? Is that the Rovers fella's name? Poom, anyway.
Yeah.
If you somehow haven't seen it, directly after Tariq's tackle, the ball kind of rolls away. Well, the ball gets thrown away, and the ball boy steps a yard onto the pitch, maybe, gets the ball. Now, the young lad shouldn't have, but he tries to roll it through Poom's legs. Just being, you know, a bit of shithousing on the sideline. It happens. And then Poom, two hands. Like, I'll say this for what it is. He pushes a child in the chest with two hands, knocks him properly to the floor. And Mr. Rob Harvey comes out with a yellow. Ben, how much do you have to assault a child for it to be a red card?
that decision is a bit mental. Whatever you want to say about the tackle before, I don't know how you can assault match day staff, I suppose, and get away with it. But look, there's a lot of people arguing online, a lot of men arguing about a child being assaulted by another grown man, which I find a bit strange. Like, at the end of the day, if that kid hadn't taken that step out and he was just had the ball where he was standing, his head is smashed open. Like, it's a very tight space, dude, as I'm sure you know. Like, it could have been way worse than it was. So I don't know how he sees that and says, that's a yellow. But here, look.
The other thing, right, that there was plenty of Rovers folk online giving it to, well, he shouldn't have been on the pitch in the first place. Well, he should have been on the sideline. He shouldn't have been on the pitch. Of course he shouldn't. But the fact of the matter is, he was on the pitch. And, like, I understand, like, adrenaline. And, I mean, geez, we'd be full of adrenaline even watching the game. So I can't imagine what it's like actually playing in a game. And tensions were high because of the tackle, and everyone's filled with like anger and tension and everything, and adrenaline. He sees red, but I mean, if you're looking and there's a literal child standing in front of you, like, how do you not go, well, probably not a wise move here? Like, he shouldn't even be snatching the ball off him, really. But like, if he had just reefed the ball off him, I would have been like, right, okay, fair enough. You know, the young lad shouldn't be on the pitch in the first place. He's getting the ball back. They're chasing the game. It's the 90th minute. But I just think it's mental. And as far as I know, like, nothing can be done because he was punished for it. So if the referee doesn't see it at all, I think something can be done kind of retrospectively. I could be totally wrong on that one. But hopefully something can be done. Because, like, what? Look, I understand it's a bad precedent anyway with the young lad coming onto the pitch, but he's a kid. What do you expect? That's just, yeah, he done something a little bit silly, but if you're not punishing somebody for doing that, like, I don't know. You'd lose all faith in being able to make any kind of normal decision. And on the subject of Rob Harvey, I actually thought he had quite a good game up until about 80 minutes, and he kind of just lost the plot a little bit. Like, he added on a mental amount of time at the end. Don't know where he was going with all that. But a good game up until that. And I actually think that helped the stuff afterwards with the ball boy and Poom helped Tyreek. Because I think if the ref had another split second or two to kind of really think about it, I think he would have been sent off. So, look, panned out the way it did. 3 points to the Reds in a massive rings end derby. We'll take it. We will definitely take it. It's probably time to head to the 1895 group chat, Ben. What do you think?
Yeah.
Sure, why not, says you.
Exactly, let's do
it. We've got 3 messages from around the club for you this morning, this evening, whenever you're listening to us. First up, we're going to hear from Collie Byron. He's our academy director, and as I mentioned in the opening, the academy season kicked off the weekend just gone, so Collie's going to give us a few updates there. After that, you'll hear from Liam Ward. He's going to fill us in on goings-on around the Women's Premier Division, some ticketing info, a little injury update in there as well from Liam. And then finally, we'll hear about Graham Watson. We will hear from Graham Watson, who was obviously, I should say, part of the kit team. Because I feel like if I call Graham the kit man,
you're going to offend somebody, Ben.
Yeah, yeah. We could offend somebody. So Graham Watson of the Shelbourne Football Club kit team gives us a little update on a face that's been missing in the last couple of weeks. And gives us a little update on the jersey situation as well. So we'll head over to the lads.
This is the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelbourne FC. The roar of the Riverside, a pint of playing from the Talca Bar, the Match Night Grub, the only show in town, Talca Park on Match Night. Tickets for our next home game against Galway FC are on sale now from shelburnefc.ie.
Hi lads, Collie Byron here, just touching base on the opening round of fixtures from the National League last weekend. The under-20s kicked off their campaign Saturday afternoon in the AOL against Finn Harps. Tough game on paper, in fairness the lads started really strong. Mark Tarzan opening the scoring after about 20 minutes. They went in 2-0 half-time at the break. An excellent second half performance. They kind of put on the afterburners, to be honest. Tyreek Sammy stole the show, I suppose, with a hat-trick in the opening day, so really good from him, and overall a strong team performance, so looking forward to see how they progress over the season. Obviously a really young squad, but some really exciting players. Our under-15s men's team played straight after them in the AUL against Bray. Again, nervy, I suppose, a nervy first game, very tight, nothing really between the two teams. Lads went ahead late in the game, and then Bray equalised in the last couple of minutes with a penalty. So, look, a good squad. They'll improve throughout the year. So, yeah, there'll be tougher games ahead, but also really good opening game for them to start with. So, looking forward to see how they progress. Sunday then, the under-14s had a long journey to Finn Harps for their first game of the campaign, I suppose. For them, a young squad, travelling 3.5 hours on the bus, certainly a new experience for some of them. A very close game, started really well, scored after 4 minutes, and then maybe lost their way a little bit. Ended up losing the game 3-2, but look, one that they'll definitely learn from. An exciting young group, some really talented young players in there, and I think collectively they can become really strong. So, yeah. They'll build on that, no doubt. And then the under-17s, who were obviously pipped to the post last year on goal difference in the league, started their campaign against Bray, halfway up the Wicklow Mountains. Not sure if Damien could see it from his back garden, but it was out in Bury Field. So windy, blustery day, cold, tough game to open with. Showed some real sparks of quality in individual patches. Finn Sherlock opened the scoring 1-0 at half time. Really tight second half, wind was against them. They grounded out, in fairness. We could have scored, could have made it 2 or 3 and didn't, which kind of left it for a nervy finish. But all in all, they were deserved winners and kicked off the campaign with a 1-0 win. So Women's League will kick off this weekend. Looking forward to that as well. It'll be great to have all the teams back in action. And then there's another busy weekend of fixtures for all the teams. The men's teams will obviously continue their campaign this weekend. So yeah, all in all, good weekend. Looking forward to the season ahead. All right, thanks.
The Women's Premier Division gets underway this Saturday week, March the 9th, with a home fixture against Sligo Rovers in Tálchaga Park at 2 p.m. We're seeing amazing growth in attendances for our men's fixtures, and we're trying to grow the attendances for the women's matches too. We'd love to get the average home attendance up from around 300 last season to 500 this season. We have an excellent squad that plays attractive football, and I've no doubt they'll be in the mix for all three domestic trophies this season. So I hope Shelburne fans will come down and support them and bring family and friends along too. Pre-season has gone well, and we have a trip to play Lisburn Ladies this Sunday, which will be the final pre-season game. Unfortunately, Courtney Maguire suffered an ACL injury in training a couple of weeks ago, so she joins Megan Smith-Lynch and Nadine Clare on the injured list. Megan had an operation in January to resolve the knee injury that she picked up in the cup final, and Nadine needed a small operation on her ankle to fix a long-term issue, so she decided to get that done during pre-season. She's making good progress in her recovery though, but she'll still need a few weeks until she's ready to play again. We've some changes on the ticketing side this season that we'd like to let people know about. Entry at the Stiles will be ticket only, and tickets will be available online or at the ticket hatch. So it's pretty much the same procedures that are in place on a Friday night. Tickets will be €10 for adults, €7 for students and senior citizens, and under 12s are free. All season tickets are valid for home league matches, and we're also going to be announcing an adult season ticket that will be valid for just the women's matches. Finally, we have to thank our sponsors, TU Dublin, Blackladder, Best Drive, Kevin McMahon, W Sports and PTSB, and also everyone who has sponsored a player. We've just four players left without a sponsor, so anyone that would like to sponsor a player, which costs €300, they can get in touch with me by emailing liam@shelburnefc.ie or contacting Niall Fitzmaurice. So we're looking forward to seeing as many Shell supporters as possible in Tálchaga on Saturday week, March 9th.
How are we, lads? Just a quick update from myself here in the kit room. Obviously this year we have a new kit partner in O'Neill's, so just really to let everyone know, everything has gone really, really well with the lads. So easy to work with. So I'm just hoping we can continue that type of partnership for the next couple of years, you know. The away jersey that was recently launched, I think it's an absolute cracker of a jersey. A lot of time and effort goes into creating these jerseys, so big shout out to Andy from the shop and Johnny. Obviously the three of us sat down and we try to create jerseys that the whole fan base would like. So I think we've done that this year. And then obviously just speaking about Johnny there, some people may or may not notice that he hasn't been around in the last, you know, week or so. So he's been in having a second full knee replacement. So he's recuperating at home. That's why he hasn't been at any of the games. But he's doing really, really well, in a lot of pain, but still giving out. So he's okay, but he'll get there now. So we're just buzzing to have him back now in the next couple of weeks, you know. As I said, he is the main man, and he, you know, has a world of knowledge in the kit department and obviously the club as well. So we're looking forward to having him back. He's champing at the bit to get back, kicking every ball for the lads, watching LOI TV. So it'd be fantastic to have him back in. So yeah, that's really it from me. It was just short and sweet. Everything's going really, really well here. But I'll leave you with this one. There's something special coming, so keep an eye out, all right? Talk to you soon, lads. Up the Reds.
It's all go, Ben. Busy, busy, busy. Some really positive results there from within the academy. Liam Ward with some positive and negative news, I suppose, with the injuries around our Women's Premier Division side. And then Graham Watson wrapped it all up with a teaser. Would you believe a kit man giving out a teaser, Ben? Where have you heard that before?
Yeah, I think it's there sounds like there's some good stuff on the horizon. So look, duty, as we always say, we're always better kept out of the loop because then we don't have to get given out to. So I'm happy and excited to see what's coming up. I don't really know a whole heap, but it sounds promising.
The less you know, the less you can leak, Ben. And of course, the new jersey, the new away jersey, debuted in the club shop over the course of the weekend. Thoughts, Ben? Thoughts on the blue and yellow?
I love it. Personally, I think my very first pod with you, I think in the quickfire questions, one of the things you asked was my favourite jersey, and it was that 04 away kit, the kind of yellow and blue one. I think I just like that colour scheme. I think it just looks really, really well. I'm a big fan of it. I like the design. I think it's unique. It's something we haven't had in a few years. I think we're usually our kits have been, I think, safe. I don't think this is an unsafe option. I think it's really unique. I think it looks really good. I'm a massive fan.
I'm on the fence, Ben. I have to be honest. I'm on the fence.
Ah, get off the fence, will you?
It's not for me.
You're the first one to give up about people on the fence.
Dazzler will always give out to me for, he says I'm very safe and I'm very, like, I don't want any hassle. Like, keep thing, I'm very vanilla, I would say. Plain Jane is the right way for me. And it's just a bit loud for me on the front. But that's just me. Will I care if we go on to win the cup or something like that in it? No, absolutely I won't. It'll be one of the best Shells kits of all time if that happens. But yeah. Look, an overwhelmingly positive reaction to it, I would say. The club shop done its highest business ever, the highest amount of sales ever on a match night. The queue for the club shop was down to the gates into the stadium, which I've never seen before. So, I mean, if that's not a sign that the boom is back, Ben, I don't know what would be.
Yeah, there was a lot of mad things going on, wasn't there?
It was a crazy, crazy day.
Sure, do you remember we were walking out of the stadium around 4 o'clock, a fella holds up traffic on Richmond Road asking for tickets?
Yeah. That was a bit mental now, I have to say. That was absolutely mad. But sure, supposedly, I heard then that there was people showing up to the gate offering the people, like, on the turnstile, just offering them cash, being like, here, I'll try you €30 if you let me in. And down at the brown door where all the very important people arrive into the ground was the same. People offering cash in hand just to be let in to get a look. It was mad. But somebody, another name actually, I know, look, there's a whole group involved in it, and it's been supporter led as well with a lot of the suggestions and the execution and stuff. But the whole experience around the match night, I felt, and a couple of mates of mine went to the game, wouldn't be huge match goers, but little things can go a long, long, long way in a football stadium. The music and the playlist and all that kind of stuff was brilliant. The sound system was, I mean, I'm only ever used to listening to, like, rusty speakers and talking. It's just what I know. I'm not being able to hear it. That's what you get used to. But the sound system was brilliant. The playlist was fantastic. The upbeat songs at the end when the team are coming off the pitch just creates an atmosphere. It was really, really good. And fair play to everyone behind the scenes that worked on it. I know Pierce Butler in particular was a big part of the kind of music and the that end of it. It made such a difference. There was so many positive comments around about it. We got positive comments after it as well, after the game. So, and Pierce, actually, while I mentioned him, he predicted a 2-1 Reds win. So, and I slagged him about it. I said, here, where are you going with that? But fair play to Pierce. Huh? He knows something about playlists, and he might know something about football, but it was a strange feeling in Talca Friday, wasn't there?
Yeah, I think just the whole match day atmosphere was just massively improved. Like you said yourself, the speakers, I think they're a resounding success, if you'll pardon the pun. Yeah, it was just, there was just a different atmosphere. It was a hot, like, even pre-match, like, coming down the road, you could hear the music. The music was on a bit earlier. I think at the end of a game, those songs can make or break you. You'll either leave your fans buzzing after a win or deflated, what have you. But, like, I was on the pitch, you know, doing my usual stuff at the end of a match, getting kind of crowd reaction, player reaction. The fans just didn't stop singing, just wouldn't leave. Like, I recording them 10, 15, 20 minutes after the final whistle, and they're still singing their hearts out. So, unbelievable. Like, it's just something that I had yet to experience. That was great for the club, great for everyone involved, and just fair play. Hopefully it continues.
Yeah, speaking of video work on the pitch afterwards, got loads of comments in as well. I know the club got them directly, loads of stuff on social media about it, and I got a couple of messages personally about it. Nothing to do with me, mind you, but I'll pass on the praise for the couple of video packages that have gone out, the one after Waterford. I'm sure there'll be another one coming out with some of the Rover stuff. That's down to yourself, Ben, and Sean Porter, who you would have seen knocking around the pitch. He's the fella in the big yellow bib. It's great stuff. It's just something a bit different. It's something we probably haven't done a whole lot of over the years. So, brilliant. It's what people want to see. It captures those moments. And, yeah, just good work all around, I would say. We got another message, Ben, from Simon in Markham in the UK. Simon followed me on Twitter there a couple of weeks ago. I had a bit back and forward with him. We're going international, Ben. Supporters from the UK and everything we're getting now. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable stuff.
But he said, morning, lads. Hope you're all well. Big fan of the podcast. Two games in, two completely different performances. You spoke previously about what's needed in regards to on the pitch challenge for the league. My question is, what do you think is needed off the pitch in regards to club structures, etc., to make a real statement of intent in the League of Ireland? Take it away, Ben.
I think we've touched on a lot of it, like that whole stadium atmosphere. Look, we obviously need a stadium for that as well, so the quicker we can get working on Talca, the better, I think. I think that'll be a big factor. Like, it's your foundation, it's what you're built on, it's your home. So I think that's kind of where you need to go. Academy as well, we had the voice note there. The lads are doing great stuff, and that's a foundation of your team. So I think that kind of stuff is getting there. I think we're improving on that kind of stuff. So I think that'll be a big factor, a big influencing thing on just general culture of the club going forward. I think that's where our efforts should be focused. I think that's where they are focused. And I think the recent improvements are only going to continue. I'm open for correction, but I think that's where we should be looking, Doody. What do you think?
I'd agree. The big one for me is a training ground. A proper training ground that's ours. I know obviously we're based in the AUL now at the moment, and there's been talk and mention at the fans forum of trying to get a hold of the AUL for ourselves and turn it into a bit of a hub where kind of everyone is together in the one area, you know, gym, training, video, everything just in one space, all teams together. That'd be a big thing for me. Like, look at Rovers with Roadstone, I should say. The academy teams play out of it. It's a great facility. I think if you're pushing on to the next level, that would be a big thing. That, like, the AUL is, I've spent years in the AUL as a kid, but it still looks the same now as it did when I was a kid going. So I'd love to get a hold of it and make it the Shell's training ground. Make it red. You know, have pictures, have murals, have all that kind of stuff up and just turn it into ours, because it doesn't feel like a Shell's training ground at the minute. Like, if you took all the players and kids training out, you would know we were based there. So the training ground would be the biggest thing for me. Well, if anyone does have any other bits and pieces that you think off the pitch we could do improving, or what would help us push on to the next level, do get in touch. That number is 0851666784. So get your voice notes in, or a text. We'll take a text either. Most people seem to be more comfortable that way. So we'll take what we can get, Ben. It's probably fair to say. This Friday, it's an away game to Sligo. It's a bit weird that it's on a Friday, but what are we expecting, Ben? What are you hoping for?
I think you just hope for very much of the same that we saw at home. Like, that is the performance you look for. That is what you want from your players. I think that's what these lads are capable of week in, week out. And I think it's definitely what the manager will expect. So hopefully that's what we're going to get. We have some returns, obviously Liam Burt, who was contractually tied. I think he wasn't able to feature against Rovers, but he will be available. I'm up for correction. Obviously, we'll get team news from the manager on Thursday after the week of training, and we'll know then. But hopefully there's some selection headaches, and yeah, we can bounce into to Friday, which is weird. Saying Friday in Sligo, so a bit of a strange one for me. What do you reckon yourself?
Throws the old senses off. I think we're going to win. I watched Derry and Sligo on Saturday. Sligo were bad. I thought they were. They looked a bit lost. Max Mattan just looked isolated up front. And I think an isolated centre-forward up against, just say, it's a back three of Paddy Barraca and Malone Cam again, he'll be swallowed up. They'll have no platform to play off. And I genuinely think we could smother Sligo with the same kind of intensity, the same aggression as we had. I definitely think we could blow Sligo out of the water. And like, when you look at it was obviously a Monday fixture as well against Galway, that's in Talca, so there's a chance for 6 points there, and I don't think it's beyond the realms of possibility that we do that. And like, if you do that, if at some start of the season, you know, like, you'd be looking at 3 wins and a draw out of the first 4 games, that's not to be sniffed at.
You bite your hand off for that.
I'm not mentioning the dreaded title challenge, but just setting a tone maybe would be a better way of putting it. But yeah, I fancy us 100% against Sligo on Friday. We've had kind of a mixed bag down there, but I definitely fancy us. The other, not concern for the weekend, but we haven't typically done overly well on these kind of double match nights. It's always been very stop-start. I remember a particularly grim night against Bowles on a Monday. So that I think this will be a big kind of test for the group, in that, like Duffer said it before loads of times, that he doesn't buy the excuse. He doesn't buy the, oh, lads are tired after playing Friday. The manager's big thing is, like, you need to be ready to go. You know, like, you're a footballer. That's what you're here for. It's what you should be gunning to do. So, and with the bit of extra depth we have this year, maybe, I think could really tell a tale. Like, I think the likes of John Martin, Dean Williams, Keith Ward, they could have huge impacts now on a Friday, Monday series of games. So, yeah, I'm extremely confident. I do think we're going to pick up 6 points. Is that misplaced optimism?
No, I don't think so. I think you reflect on a very positive display on Friday, a massive result, and I think you just bounce in to those two games and hope for very much the same. Like, you see what the lads are capable of. Like, absolutely realistic to consider that we get 6 points.
Yeah, I definitely think so. Friday's game, obviously, it's away to Sligo. There is an official club bus going. As of this moment in time, as far as I'm aware, that bus is full. But if you want to get on to the club SLO, John Brennan, he's running the bus. He's at 087-661-0927. Give John a shout and let him know you're interested in travelling. It just means if there's a cancellation or if people pull out or anything like that, you still might have a chance of getting onto the bus. And it is on a Friday. Do not forget the game is on a Friday, because I've seen it before, people mixing the days up and having a disaster. There was a question last week, Ben, that I didn't get to, and I thought it was an interesting one, because I think we'll have very different feelings on it. Just, it's an era, age thing, I would say. It came from Ryan last week, and he said, where does 2023 rank in all your season supporting shells? Personally, it was my favourite year following the Reds. Ben, your favourite year, season following Shelbourne Football Club?
Look, recency bias, I think, plays a massive part in this. And, like, for a long time, and Darren's always slagged myself and Reggie over this, but, like, we've fairly used to shells not being great. Like, we've seen a lot of the bad stuff, so the good stuff is, I think, just trumps it all, and it just sticks in your memory. So I think last season would probably be up there for my best season following the Reds. It was just, you know, having a small part to play in being involved, and just, you know, getting to travel around the country with yourselves, and it's just, it's a big kind of culture thing, group thing, where it's just, it's an experience, and it was probably my best experience following the Reds. So I think it's number one for me just because of that.
You're going last year as well. Well, yeah, talking about you and Reggie not really remembering, you know, some of the better times. Neither of you knew who Tony McCarthy was Friday when he was coming into the ground. So, yeah, that probably shows the age gap a little bit. I don't really remember. I would have been at games with Tony Mac playing, but I don't, you know, couldn't give you the ins and outs of what type of player he was. But, yeah, I couldn't believe you didn't know who Tony Mac was.
Someone send in a voice now. Tell us all about him. I'd love to hear.
Yeah, you know, I tell you, speaking of, you know, great ex Reds coming to games, Mark Rutherford, Sparky, made an appearance at full time as well. I believe he had well wishes for Johnny Watson, who, of course, Graham mentioned earlier on in the group chat. Yeah, great to see Mark Rutherford back in Talca. He's had a rough old couple of years, so yeah, he's just that big smiley face. He'd spot him from a mile off just with that big grin. Yeah, great to see Mark Rutherford back in Talca. I've racked my brain over this one for the last kind of week, and 23, yeah, it was a great season. So was, I mean, getting to the cup final was magic. Obviously tainted a bit by the way it ended. And like some of the European years, like 04, like just those, that early 2000s, that whole time was just like a big blur. But I was still quite young. I don't really remember the ins and outs. I'd remember little moments of it more so than the finer details. But 08, I think, always stands out for me. Don't know why. Just anytime anyone mentions like good old days watching the Shells, I always think of 08. I think of we'd bounced back from 07. Like, obviously, 07, look, everyone's heard the story by now. Dermot Keighley just put a mob together, just got whoever he could, and we consolidated, and it was great to just have a club to even be following that year. But then 08, put a decent squad together, felt like we had a chance of going up. Now look, it ended in complete travesty in the end, but that year in 08, I remember myself, my dad be driving, my two brothers, my cousin, all bailed in the back of the car, going to Limerick and Finn Harps and up and down the country every Friday. It was just, as you said, Ben, it's like, just takes over. It was just the whole week geared up to a Friday. And you look back on it now, like, my dad would have been at work the next morning. He would have been getting up for work at like 2:15, 3:00 in the morning on the Saturday morning. That's after doing a spin up to Finn Harps and back. So that probably, that season away just kind of stands out for me. I was in full fanatical kid mode at that stage, so I'd say 08. Let us know who or what season was your favourite. Everyone will have a different answer for that. Like, the older demographic, I'm sure, would go back to kind of the late 90s. There's been some great years, people all have different reasons for it, but yeah, 08 is mine. You're sticking with 23, Ben?
Yeah, I just think, like, as you said, it's the memories you make during the season that stick out more than maybe the games. And I don't know if that's a bad thing or a good thing, but it's just like some of my happiest memories in recent years have come from the last year following the Reds up and down the country. So I think that's why it has to be that for me.
Yeah, fair. Ben, I almost forgot the most important voice note that we got. And this is going to close out the pod for me, because I don't know who this person is. They didn't give us their name. But they're just so happy. They're just so happy. And I thoroughly enjoyed listening to this voice note. I listened to it so many times today, because it's just so full of happiness and joy at beating Rovers in Talca. So another mystery man, you're going to sound us out. Ben, thank you very much as always for giving up your evening.
No problem. Happy to be here as always.
Take it away, Mr. Happy Man.
Friday night at Talca Park, you simply cannot beat it. What a performance from the lads against Shamrock Rovers. They were fantastic from the start to finish and thoroughly deserved the win. It's a great time to be a Shelburne supporter, and I'm very optimistic for the season ahead. Talca Park was rocking on Friday night. It was great to walk down Richmond Road before the game with my dad and see the new murals outside the ground. They look brilliant. When you get inside Talca, you see the new scoreboard down the Ballybock end. Brilliant. The new paintings over by the riverside look fantastic. But my special shout out has to go to the new PA system. Crystal clear, it was fantastic, and the place was buzzing. The new soundtrack, amazing. Much, much better from previous seasons. I'm already buzzing for the next home match. Up the Reds.